It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? There was a war between a lot of monkeys in the streets of Thailand, and I am in on that. At 1:30, Bob Bowlsby is going out guns blazing. And in mere minutes, we're discussing Texas OU to the SEC and more from around college football with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
All right, before we jump into this, just a couple quick things. We talked about, of course, the Big 12 accusing ESPN of trying to take apart the Big 12. We should also tell you, we talked to Stuart Mandel of The Athletic yesterday before this Bob Bowlsby story and the Big 12 thing broke, so just know that as you listen to this interview. A&M Board of Regents says to tell their president to vote yes on Texas and Oklahoma coming into the SEC, and we just talked with Isaiah Collier about the NBA draft. Sources are telling Mr. Woj himself that the Pistons will take Cunningham. No big shock there, but now apparently it is up to team number two. Apparently the word has gotten out that Cunningham will be the number one player taken in the draft. That means that the Houston Rockets would now technically be on the clock. So we'll keep you up to date on all of those things. Let's get right into this interview. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. We caught up with him to talk about, you know what, Texas and Oklahoma and all the stuff. Here we go. A lot of stuff going on, obviously, in college football right now. We thought we'd talk to one of the best out there about it. It is Stuart Mandel of The Athletic at SL Mandel on Twitter. And, of course, check out all the great work at The Athletic. Stuart, thank you so much for the time. How are you?
I'm good. I'm guessing it's a little bit busy in Austin, though.
Yeah, a little bit crazy. I've admitted plenty on the air that my mouth literally hung open when Trey showed me the headline and it said Texas and it said Oklahoma and it said SEC. Give me the national perspective on your shock level, if there was any, or did it not surprise you at all?
Oh, I mean, nobody knew this was coming, so except maybe those parties involved. So it absolutely caught us off guard nationally, was with the cover of the sport. But obviously, it didn't come out of complete nowhere, having gone through this 10 years ago. You know, it wasn't like I remember when the Pac-16 thing was first reported by Chip Brown, you almost had to like, is he writing fiction here? Like, what? This was so inconceivable. Having gone through all that a decade ago, you know, I'm at the point now where I would believe just about anything with realignment, and certainly with those two schools.
Assuming that the Big 12 does dissolve, if we see these four super conferences form over the next couple of years as the college football playoff expands, does the SEC make the most sense to you in terms of a new home for both Texas and Oklahoma?
It kind of makes more sense to me for Texas than for Oklahoma because of the Texas A&M connection, and there is certainly a sense, whether it's accurate or not, that A&M has jumped ahead of them in large part because of the SEC affiliation. And their brand has remained strong. Even after a decade of mediocrity, like Texas's brand is still as strong as ever. So if they go into that conference and struggle at first, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. And certainly Sark may just well do very well in it. He's coming from that conference. For Oklahoma, I mean, I think it's going to be a big adjustment because they've spent two decades winning conference title after conference title after conference title, you know, going to the playoff more often than not. And I just don't think that's going to be realistic in the SEC. I'm not saying they're going to fall apart. Certainly, if you put them in there right now, I think they're as good a program as any but Alabama. But, you know, what we're talking about here, a 16-team conference, however they end up organizing the schedule, like, there are going to be really good teams that recruit the kind of what caliber of players Oklahoma does. They go 9-4. That's just the reality of it. So I get why it's appealing from an excitement factor and the kind of opponents you're going to be playing and certainly the money. But if you're asking me what conference would it make the most sense for Oklahoma to join, just, you know, if you were just picking one, I would say the Big Ten because it's more, they have a lot in common academically, but more so from a football perspective. You know, you put Oklahoma in the Big Ten, it's them and Ohio State. And then there's nobody, you know, there's some good programs, but they're not on that level. And so, you know, if I were them personally, I would enjoy kind of being Oklahoma's foil, maybe playing them, or Ohio State's foil, maybe playing them in the title game, and some years you win and some years you lose, than being one of six or eight of those kind of programs in the SEC.
Yeah, Stuart, one of the things that's confused me through this whole thing, I'm trying to work it out in my brain, is that for me, Texas and Oklahoma, to me, they didn't need to go to the SEC. Their path to a championship would obviously get more difficult, but I never thought they really needed it. I thought a conference with those two and really anything else could survive in this version of college football. Would you disagree with that? Do you think this is the move Texas and Oklahoma ultimately had to make? And it's not, you can't stay where you are, that they had to find a new conference.
I don't think they had to, but once they got back that feedback, and it's been well reported now, that there just wasn't a lot of interest on the part of ESPN and Fox to move quickly on securing their rights. I think that was a signal that, you know, you said off the top, this idea of four super conferences. To me, it's two super conferences. And the Big 12 is clearly, even before those two left, was being given the signal that they're second class, that they're more in line with the Pac-12 and the ACC. And so I can understand why these two, you know, two of the most prestigious programs in the sport would say we want to be part of something more that's more coveted and held in higher regard. And now they're joining what was already the premier college football conference and will be, you know, even more so and assuredly so going forward. I think it's more about that than it is path to a championship game.
With two super conferences, how do you envision that playing out? How many teams do you think is in each conference? And do you see conferences combining their efforts, say like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten trying to come together?
It'll be interesting to see, you know, everybody's playing out all the dominoes right now. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think the Big Ten has to do anything. They already make the most money of any conference. The SEC might pass them, you know, with this new deal, but it won't be a profound difference because they have so many big brand name schools that TV covets. And Ohio State is going to keep being Ohio State, and there's other programs, you know, Michigan can never get its act together, certainly. Penn State was there for a while, that are capable of competing at the highest level. So you're not just going to go out and add two schools just to add two schools. They would have to be real big names, I think, for the Big Ten to want to add those schools. And so the question is, are they going to panic and say, well, we can't just stand pat and do nothing? And in that case, you know, the kind of schools the Big Ten would be interested in are not the eight leftovers from the Big 12. It would be, to your question, something like, do we make some sort of alliance with the Pac-12? Do we try to steal away their top programs? Because they're going to be available soon. Their deal is coming up soon, whereas the ACC locked those schools in for a long time.
Talking with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, again, at SL Mandel on Twitter. Give him a follow. One of the best voices in college football, trying to break it all down with what's about to happen here. And Stuart, the timeline, as you can imagine, is very important to Texas fans and Oklahoma fans right now. They keep reading about 2025, but they're hoping that it's a year before that. Give us a national perspective on once the SEC lawyers and the Texas lawyers and all the other lawyers get involved, when could we see this happen with a 16-team SEC?
Well, that's the question everybody wants to know. And the only thing I can say is I don't see how it's even possible for them to stay for another 4 years in a conference with a bunch of members who hate them. It's going to be miserable. And I would pay whatever money you have to pay to get out early because, you know, you're going to make that up and then some. And I've said to people, it's like when you get a mortgage and that you have to figure out what's the break-even point on the extra, you know, what you pay to get the discount. Like how long would we have to be in the SEC to make up the $70 million we had to pay to get out? I don't think it would be very long. Now, that's up to the lawyers to figure out, but I don't think they can wait till 2025. I don't think they can wait till 2023. I think you need to get out because it's just going to be so untenable.
Stuart, you just mentioned the eight teams left in the Big 12 who aren't too fond of Texas and Oklahoma. There is one team in their new conference who is not going to be very fond of them, and that is the Texas A&M Aggies, of course. Did you understand that initial reaction from them last week? There's a strong likelihood that they actually leaked the story to the Houston Chronicle. Did you get why they were maybe a bit bent out of shape at the prospect of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC?
I think it was all for show. I think that this thing was so far down the road. It had clearly been in the works for a long time. You can't tell me that nobody at Texas A&M knew what was about to happen. And and knows that like they can't single-handedly keep it from happening. So, but they knew their fans would be furious, and I understand why they are. They've taken so much pride in you know, we're no longer attached to Texas and we're in a better conference and so on and so forth. And so of course they're furious that Texas is back, back to haunt them, if you will. But they weren't going to stop it from happening. I don't know where the idea that Missouri and Arkansas were going to vote against it came from. All they, you know, why would Missouri not want the tens of millions of extra dollars that are going to come from this? So, you know, I think you watched it play out at SEC Media Days. It was one of the more, you know, sometimes you try to guess the source of a story, but you don't know for sure. Like, no, everybody knows that that was A&M that leaked that. And choreographed it so that their AD was there to talk to say all that stuff to the reporters. But then 3 days later, they backed off that. And so, you know, I think it was to appease their fans, to make it look like they were going to try to stop it. But knowing full well, it was already a done deal.
Stuart, if that SEC vote comes in and it's 13-1, everybody will know what would have happened at that point. Do you think there's anything to gain for A&M standing on that principle, if that's what they want to do, and vote no? Or would you tell them you probably need to vote yes on this thing?
I will fully expect that press release to come out and say it was a unanimous vote. I really do. Would the fans like it? Would the Aggies fans like it if they voted against it? Absolutely. But you got to think about your relationship with the conference. And I know the conference could not have, you know, had to be furious with how they basically took over SEC Media Days with this. Who knows when the SEC was actually ready for this to come out? It certainly wasn't going to be during SEC Media Day. So, you know, I think that for the sake of your continued co-relationship with the other schools, you'll vote yes, or you'll abstain or something. But I don't think it'll come out that there was a no vote.
Stuart, this whole thing has become possible because of the likelihood of college football playoff expansion and NIL. I wanted to ask about the expansion first because seemed like we were hearing a month or so ago that at some point prior to the start of this season, we might hear something official about an expansion in 2023. What is the latest you're hearing on that? Do you think 12 is the right number to expand to? And when do you think that expanded playoff would go into place?
Nicole Auerbach and I wrote a story about that for The Athletic today. The new Pac-12 commissioner, George Kliavkoff, was pretty outspoken about this yesterday at their media days. I think that the Pac-12, ACC, and Big Ten feel like they got manipulated. Greg Sankey was on that subcommittee of four that formed that proposal and pitched it to the larger group as this thing that's going to be so great for college football. And then it turns out like he knew what was going on. So that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But I feel much less certain today than I did a month or two ago that they'll be able to do it fast and have us move to 12 teams in a couple of years. The contract goes through 2025, and if you were going to break it early, there was always the issue of the only way you can do it earlier is if ESPN keeps it and you never take it to the open market, and you could potentially be leaving money on the table if you do that. So I think that they're at least considering, hey, let's let it play out. Let's not rush this through. And so I think there's a lot of hurt feelings. I think there's, you know, at the time it made sense why they had a subgroup work on it. Now it feels like, why didn't the whole group work on it at the same time? Why were three conferences completely left out? Three power conferences, you know, kind of left in the dark on it till the end. So 12-team playoffs coming. I don't think you can take that back. But I would have said assuredly a couple months ago, they'll have to do it now. Now that it's out there, they can't make people wait 5 years for it, and I'm not as certain about that anymore.
And the dam is broken on NIL now as well. Overall, that's a great thing for college athletes, being able to profit off of name, image, and likeness. Has there been anything surprising to you about the first month of NIL?
That's a great question. I didn't know what to expect from the first month of NIL. I was fascinated to see how it all played out. And what I would say is I'm really amazed and impressed by how knowledgeable the top players are on this already. I was at Pac-12 Media Days yesterday. Kayvon Thibodeau, possible number one pick in the draft next year, Oregon star, recently announced a partnership with Phil Knight for a series of NFTs. Don't ask me to explain what an NFT is. but The way he talked about the deals, he's the same thing with Keaton Slovis, the USC quarterback who's there, who has signed with Rich Paul's agency to do it. You would think these guys were 10-year NFL veterans. You know, for something that has never been done for in college sports before, they are very knowledgeable about it. And so I think that's a credit to the schools for educating them on it. I'm sure agents as well were doing that. And so because of that, it's further along already than I thought it would be. I thought it would just kind of start out as, you know, and you did see plenty of this, right? Like barbecue restaurant sponsoring the Arkansas offensive line and, you know, a gardening company is going to, you know, like that, that was what I expected to start out as. And then eventually it might build to bigger deals, but no, we're seeing a lot of big deals right off the bat.
Talking with Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. So Stuart, along those lines, are you seeing the reaction? And like you said, you didn't know what to expect. Talk about the reaction from coaches because, you know, Dabo Swinney back in the day had certain things to say, and coaches for years always felt like they were on the complete opposite side of that discussion. Do you sense now that coaches are trying to get comfortable with this and getting, you know, comfortable with the idea of trying to help their players when they can?
The smart ones have embraced it, and I think most of them have. I mean, when Nick Saban said what he said about Bryce Young, that was very intentional. We have no way to know if that's accurate, that he's making almost seven figures, but whether it is or whether it's not, Nick Saban wanted to make sure that recruits around the country knew that if you come to Alabama, this could happen. And that's the smart play, frankly. It's only going to help you in recruiting to let athletes know that if you come here, we will, you know, we will help you, we will support you in building your brand. Now, we're not going to stand against it, which is what the college sports establishment spent years doing, trying to prevent this from happening, trying to restrict players from having this opportunity. Only when they were forced to by various state legislators did they finally come around on it. But now that it's here, yeah, I think that most coaches are embracing it. They're certainly nervous and skeptical. David Shaw at Pac-12 yesterday was very skeptical about that Nick Saban, the comments, and whether that's right for college football and all that. But nobody's going to stand in the way, I don't think, of their athletes profiting off it, or word's going to get out pretty quickly in the recruiting circles.
Well, and on that note, Greg Sankey has been very critical of the NCAA and just the control that they have over college sports. Even Mark Emmert has come out and said the NCAA should probably take a back seat and not try and come up with universal policies for all of college sports, since obviously all sports are different with college football at the top. Do you agree with that, that the NCAA should have less of a role in college sports? And if so, what does a leadership structure look like in college football?
Yeah, I mean, if you were starting it, and Mark Emmert himself said this, if you were starting college sports from scratch today, it would not look anything like this. Why would you have Division III schools that don't even sponsor football and don't give out athletic scholarships governed by the same organization that governs Alabama and Texas? They don't have anything in common. And you could also make the case that why do these rules have to be universal for football and men's basketball that make all the money? And also with, you know, swimming, right? Like, they're just completely different sports. It's going to be very, very, very hard to unwind, though, because it's so entrenched. Greg Sankey made critical comments, but Greg Sankey also was the chairman of the Committee on Infractions. And I don't know if he's been on the basketball committee or not, but he's certainly been on other committees. Like, this is the only form of college sports he knows. Same with Bob Bowlesby, same with most of these people. So, you know, I'll be interested to see. You know, Mark Emmert can say that, Greg Sankey can say that, but what does that look like in action? What are you guys actually going to do to come up with a better way to govern college sports?
Stuart, last one from me. Let's go to the field itself. What do you think about Texas with Steve Sarkisian? As you can imagine, folks around here are trying to figure out if they have made the right choice. They've been through a lot of weirdness. They hope it's about to get really good. What do you think about Texas in 2021?
I'm fascinated. I don't know what to expect. I feel pretty good about it just because, you know, for the kind of offense that Sark wants to run, Bijan Robinson is about a perfect player for it, and it's not like he's the only weapon they have. But that's the thing. Like, I know Sark is a great offensive play caller. I know he will put his quarterbacks and his skill players in position to be successful. But his two stints as a head coach weren't that great. And, you know, a lot of faith is being put in, you know, that he's going to kind of have like a Lane Kiffin type transformation, having gone through the Alabama system, the Nick Saban car wash, if you will. He's going to come out from it a much better head coach. And maybe he will. I'm not ruling it out. But there's certainly more to being a successful head coach, and certainly at a school like Texas, being the CEO and all the scrutiny that comes with it. there's a lot more that goes into it than calling the right plays on Saturdays. And so, you know, I'm fascinated to see it. I would be surprised if they're not better this first season than they've been the past few years, but whether it will be dramatically better, it remains to be seen.
And how do you think A&M season plays out?
You know, that's a tough one as well. I think that they have a lot of really elite players. You know, the fruits of Jimbo Fisher's recruiting is paying off, and you're seeing it in, you know, I think it's either Mel Kiper or Todd McShay's early position rankings for next year. They have the number one or two guy at several different positions. It's unfortunately not at quarterback. So, you know, if this were Kellen Mond coming back with this same team, they would be on my very, very short list of teams to make the playoff. And it's not like Kellen Mond was Mac Jones by any means, but he was a veteran quarterback. So between the change of quarterback and then the inexperience of the offensive line, you know, I think that they have the core pieces to have a very good season. And whether it's a playoff / national championship contending type season will come down to those two positions.
That is Stuart Mandel. If you haven't checked out The Athletic, what are you waiting on? He just mentioned the article that he's been recently working on, one of the best sites out there. Check out theathletic.com at SL Mandel on Twitter. You can get the information that way as well. Check out that great podcast. Stuart, always appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, nice enough to give us some time yesterday, a very busy man. Some good comments there, as always, as we talked Texas, Oklahoma, SEC. If you've missed the latest on that today, you've got the really kind of normal story coming out of College Station and the very abnormal story coming out of the Big 12 offices. Bob Bowlesby on the attack coming up on The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Deep within my heart lies a melody. A song of voice and tone.
This is what I've been waiting on all day.
Where in dreams
if you're gonna,
I live with a melody.
If you're going to get Alamo-ish, this is the song you got to do. Okay, Trey, my favorite version of this song is probably the duet with Ray Price and Willie. Is this Ray?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is.
Dude, Ray Price, one of my favorite like country crooners of all time.
I'll be honest, I'm running out of songs that connect with San Antonio or the Alamo. Thankfully, this one came up last second. But it's just a bunch of people covering the same two or three songs if I'm going to keep this theme up.
Wait, there's Willie.
Yeah.
There it is.
And that's a true duet, too. I mean, they're singing at the same time, obviously.
Yeah, baby. Oh, I love that one. I have heard both of those men perform that song live independently.
Wow.
Saw Ray Price and probably both at the Backyard at one point as well. I've seen Willie perform multiple times, and he probably did San Antonio Rose every time. And then Ray Price, just such a legend. My granddad was a Ray Price guy, and he was the slick back hair, pump, you know, perfect hair, yeah, kind of crooner type, and such a smooth voice. Ray Price, who I don't believe is with us anymore. You could double check me on that. I believe Ray Price has passed on now. But
and if he's not, he will be in 2 weeks.
If he's not, he may be on notice. But just an incredible song there. So tell him, Trey, what do you got going on here? This book that's trying to, you know, tell truths about the Alamo and stuff.
Yeah, about a month ago, this book was going to be showcased at the Bob Bullock Museum, but Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick stopped the event because the book is called Forget the Alamo. It's co-authored by Brian Burrow, Chris Tomlinson, and Jason Stanford, and it is basically making the case that the Alamo was all about slavery and Mexico's attempt to end slavery in Texas, which of course was a part of Mexico at the time. They make some interesting points in this book. I don't fully agree with it, but I also know that if you try to fully shut down a conversation, it's only going to encourage more people to approach that conversation And they'll probably likely be taking the side of those who are trying to bring a different narrative to light. I think it's healthier to have these conversations, especially if you don't agree with them. They make some interesting points in this book. I don't agree with all of them, but I knew it would be important to speak with Chris Tomlinson on Books on Pod about Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. You can hear that now at booksonpod.com.
For the record, the great Ray Price died in 2013.
Well, you're under investigation for that one now.
In Mount Pleasant, Texas.
Mount Pleasant. Okay, I never would have guessed that.
Born in Perryville, Texas, and died in Mount Pleasant, according to the highly accurate Wikipedia.
Are there any other San Antonio songs? Because that's it for me.
Someone is suggesting the song Texas by George Strait. You may need to listen and see if there's a mention in there.
All my exes live in Texas?
Maybe.
That's how I'm going.
Yeah,
every other George Strait song has to do with this state.
Just expand out to Texas and you got plenty. Plenty.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
There you go. All right, so we'll do that for the rest of the show. Let Trey pump the podcast, and who knows, maybe turn you on to a book that will either open your mind or piss you off, or both. Sometimes that's a good combo.
Look, the conversation, if it pisses you off, I encourage you to go listen, because you may learn something, and I don't fully agree with the point that they're trying to make. I push back on Chris with some things.
Did you have a full-on Books on Pod fight at any point? Did you threaten to close down the Zoom?
No. I'm never going to do that. If the guest wants to do that, well, that's disappointing, because I feel like I'm pretty good at not only engaging in, but also leading debates. And Chris didn't either. Chris didn't back down. He made his points. He disagreed with me on some things. I disagreed with him on other things. I pointed out that not everybody in the Alamo was slave owners. Santa Ana could have shown mercy to people that they were fighting against. They tried to wave the white flag ahead of time, and he's like, no, you people are land pirates, so you're all going to die. Now, a few people ended up not dying. He let some slaves go. He let some Tejanos go. He let Suzanne Dickinson go as well, so that they could tell that story to Sam Houston and the other leadership throughout the state.
Oh, by the way, here's a great one, Trey. Is Anybody Going to San Antone by Charlie Pride? I forgot about that one. Another great crooner. Anybody going to San Antone?
Right.
Or Phoenix, Arizona? Oh, my God. Forgot about that one.
There it is.
That's some 80s country right there.
Yeah, that's going to be played.
Come on. Thank you for that suggestion. So we'll continue to play the Texas music for you. Somebody's saying, I figured you guys would be playing all ZZ Top songs today. We did play some ZZ Top yesterday for the late great Dusty Hill. I can't believe I have to put the word late in there now. Dead at the age of 72. That one absolutely sucked yesterday. And before you even send your texts, and Brad Kellner stuck his head in here yesterday and asked me, no, I was not talking about ZZ Top in any bad way. Trey, back me up. I'm not responsible for Dusty Hill. Come on.
My memory is foggy right now, Chad. I'm starting to think back now. Maybe you did say something over the last couple of weeks, and because I don't always listen well, I just missed it. I'm going to have to go back through the tape before I can say unequivocally that you did not say something about ZZ Top.
I picked the wrong day to ask you to support me. I really did. You're in an anarchistic mood today, and I should not have asked that question.
I'm trying to burn it all down today, man.
You really are. All right, so here's your update on Texas, Oklahoma, SEC, and all of that. Yesterday afternoon, Board of Regents meeting at A&M, they voted 8-1 to tell their president to tell the SEC yes on Texas and Oklahoma. Pretty mild story in the end. Maybe there would have been a little controversy if the Aggies had decided to go with a no. They decided to go with a yes. So that's part one. Today we know the SEC will meet with the chancellors and presidents. That'll happen sometime this afternoon. Maybe by the time we all go to bed tonight, that vote may happen. Not guaranteed the vote will happen, but might be something to look out for. But, Trey, it's the Big 12 story that everyone's talking about today, where Bob Bowlsby, I didn't even know he had an accusatory tone. We know he doesn't have an accusatory tone. I didn't know he knew accusatory words. Bob Bowlsby's the guy, Trey, like you have an uncle, you're at the Thanksgiving table. He's so mind-numbingly boring, no one listens to what he says. But at the wrong moment, everybody's fork is off the plate. It goes dead silent. And his rumbling ends up being like that's why I don't think the Holocaust actually happened. And then the whole family has to turn and go, what did he just say? What did Uncle Maury just say? So that's I feel like what happens when Bob Bowlsby, in his rambling and boringness, went, well, you know, ESPN is behind this whole thing. Wait, what?
So I don't think that's as far-fetched a conspiracy theory as the Holocaust didn't happen.
No, sure.
This would be like Uncle Bob maybe last July or August saying, you know, this whole COVID thing may have actually been the result of a lab leak. And everybody looks at him like, what the hell are you talking about, man?
What are you talking about?
The more things play out, the more you realize that boring / crazy Uncle Bob wasn't so crazy after all. He's still boring. He just may not have been as crazy as you thought in that moment. Because much like with the news that broke last week about Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, it does make sense to me. Like, there's some logic there that if I really want to think about connecting the dots, I can see that. And because Bowlsby, as boring as he is so measured with things, and he made this point also, that he wouldn't be bringing this up if he didn't have some pretty strong evidence suggesting that it was happening. Mm-hmm. Obviously he believes it, but I feel like there's something pretty major backing him up with this. And if so, ESPN should be answering some questions versus us just dismissing Bob Bowlsby as the crazy, boring uncle.
If he had some proof that ESPN had reached out to, let's say it is an AAC school or Pac-12 or whoever, had reached out to a school and said, you need to call this Big 12 school to join your conference because we feel like that would be a good thing. What's the charge there? Again, they own everything. They own a part of every conference. So what is it? You're colluding against yourself?
The charge there is that ESPN is encouraging the destruction of one of its Power Five to try and set up other conferences that it has fully under its control to look as good as possible. The charge is, yes, it has to do with the SEC taking Texas and Oklahoma, but I think the bigger charge here is trying to get the ACC to poach some of these other schools.
What do you think the result would be if he can prove it? If he could prove it, what happens?
There may be something antitrust there. I'm not totally sure. No. I think it might be wise for us to try and seek out a legal expert sometime over the next couple of shows because they would know better than I would. You know, monopoly is not the right word, but antitrust, it may be in that category of things. If you're listening right now and you can chime in on the text line, let us know because I am genuinely curious as well. Like, if what he's saying is true, what does it mean for ESPN? Can ESPN get in trouble as a result?
All right, let me ask you for a number. The Big 12 has survived with 12 members, obviously, and then a couple leave and you try to figure out. And there's been an 11-team version and a 10-team version. And now there'd be Texas and Oklahoma gone, and would you try to bring... Out of these eight teams, how many of them do you think have to show interest in another conference before the house officially crumbles? How many have to show interest? Is it just one? Does one more send it into you know, bankruptcy mode?
I think four more finding a new home, and that could be Kansas and Iowa State to the Big Ten. It could be West Virginia to the ACC. It could be four schools going to the ACC, or AAC, excuse me. That would be the end of the conference after this year.
Okay.
Because at that point, the media rights have to be dissolved because a majority of members / former members will vote to end it. And as much as Bob Bowlsby may want to say, because he is apparently saying this today, that they're going to hold on as hard as possible to Oklahoma and Texas and bind them to this contract until 2025. There's no way in hell that's happening, even if it means Texas and Oklahoma having to pay a sort of penalty to get out of it.
It's a good try, Bob. That's like a guy showing up every year at the anniversary dinner site and saying he's going to live up to the contract and she's going to do it too because she promised him when they got married. Yeah, you go ahead and show up. I'll bet you she's not there. You don't get to determine that she still shows up if she decides not to be married to you anymore.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that. All right, so do you want to get this Quinn Ewers story out here? I don't want to rush it, but I feel like it's something we need to get out into the space at some point.
Let's talk about it next segment. I'll scrap the
Don't go scrapping monkey wars.
Monkey v. monkeys.
Wait a minute.
Warring in the streets of Thailand.
No, we got Tyler Coe coming in for a whole hour. We can talk about it then.
We can talk about monkey v. monkey in the streets of Thailand with Tyler, too, if we really want.
Oh, wait a minute. You're right. All right, never mind. I'd like to hear Tyler's comment on monkey wars. So if you could do that, that'd be great.
It may get pushed back altogether tomorrow. We'll see. We shall see.
Tyler Coe's coming in next hour. That's always fun. He's got a new podcast coming up, and we'll tell you about that. At some point, Monkey Wars, because I'm not letting Trey get rid of that one, and hopefully at some point this Quinn Ewers decision that's coming up, it is a monstrous decision that maybe you haven't thought about when it comes to NIL. Stay with us. It's The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Off the brim of my hat, sure is cold today. Here I am walking down 66, wish she hadn't done me that way. Sleeping under a table in a roadside park, a man could wake up dead. But it sure seems warmer than it did in our king-sized bed. Is anybody going to San Antonio?
There you go.
Or Phoenix, Arizona?
See, if everyone at the Bullock Museum could have just listened to that song, they'd have been ready to have any conversation you want. Trey's playing Alamo, San Antonio, Texas kind of related songs today for a specific reason. Tell them about it, Trey.
Well, the Bullock Museum wanted to have the conversation. Abbott and Dan Patrick did not want to let it happen. And in a sense, I understand, but you need to have the most disagreeable of conversations because shutting it down is only going to turn more people on to whatever the narrative is that you're trying to protect against. New episode of Books on Pod is out now with Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. Yes, this is the book that the Bullock Museum was not allowed to talk about a month ago. We're not afraid of having those conversations on Books on Pod, and I don't fully agree with the point that they're trying to make here, that the Alamo is all about slavery. Check out my chat with Chris Tomlinson right now at Books on... Actually, not right now. Wait until after
don't
3.
Don't do it now. Not now.
Maybe even after 7 o'clock when the triple option is over with. But eventually do check it out at booksonpod.com or by searching Books on Pod wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yes, indeed. Hope you're having a good Thursday. Lots of stuff going on around here with the Texas-Oklahoma SEC, all that going on. Also, today is an out-and-about day for RBKD, minus the Rod Babers part of that. Brad and Kevin are going to be out at Total Men's Primary Care, one of my favorite places. I'm a patient of theirs. I tell you about them all the time. They're celebrating a grand reopening in San Marcos. So go check them out down there, or maybe it's up there for you. Check out the details at hornfm.com. All right, Trey, where are we at in society time? Let's fire it off, and then you decide what you want to do here.
Where are we at in society today?
Look, we are talking Quinn Ewers right now. The
okay.
Monkey War may have to wait a day, but we will eventually get to it. You
all
trust
right.
me on that one.
I
there
trust you.
There will eventually be a slow enough sports day that I get to talk about monkeys battling it out in the streets of Thailand.
I need to hear that story. That would be something else. So the Quinn Ewers story, would you like to present to the people here? This is a fascinating angle of NIL I hadn't thought of.
So Pete Thamel had a big day yesterday. He not only got to cover what was going on with Bob Bowlesby, but also break the story that Quinn Ewers, who of course is a senior to be at South Lake Carroll this year, took his team all the way to the championship game last year before they lost to Westlake and Cade Klubnik. Well, Quinn Ewers is considering sitting out his senior season, Chad, for a big reason. And that big reason is that he might be able to make $1 million if he decides to finish one more prereq and enroll at Ohio State in the next month and actually go through fall practices with the Buckeyes, be a member of that roster this year, and start earning that NIL cash. You and I talked about this a few weeks back, guessing that high school players would be able to do what college athletes now can, and that's profit off of NIL, but it varies from state to state.
Yeah.
And here in Texas, that's not allowed. Well, Quinn Ewers, who is a very recognizable face within high school football, inside Texas or out, with the blonde mullet and the brashness.
The man does have a look to him, doesn't he?
And the fact that he is about to go to Ohio State
yeah.
as a five-star QB.
That hair is going to so fit in Columbus.
Well, according to the Ewers family, he might be able to earn as much as $1 million this year, which just speaks to this idea
wow.
that quarterbacks at big-time schools have the most earnings potential. Apparently, a local company in the DFW area called Holy Kombucha wants to sponsor him, and so do some others. And so the Ewers are making a smart business decision here by saying, look, yeah, it'd be fun to play that senior season out, but if we can get things started at Ohio State and compete for the starting gig this year, but if not, at least be a year into the program when you're technically supposed to be there for the very first year, pulling a Trevor Lawrence and getting to take the reins and run with it, then why not? Especially when you're going to be making a seven-figure payday in the process.
Now, he couldn't play this year, could he?
He could play this year.
He could even play?
He only has one more class to finish, which he is supposed
to. Wow.
I think by the start of August when Ohio State players do check in.
Somebody might want to tell, what's the kid's name? C.J. Stroud? T.J. Stroud? Whoever it is they think might be their starter? Like that'd kind of shake up the quarterback room a little bit.
Yes.
I had not thought of this angle, and I'll ask the silly question on behalf of every high school football fan in Texas. Trey, it's kind of a big deal in the state of Texas. You could even argue it's kind of a business for some communities in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that Quinn Ewers couldn't make a little money? Why is it that the offensive line couldn't tell you what barbecue place they go to and get a little scratch and get some free meals? Why is that again?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just asking. Like, little communities have those things.
But they could work for minimum wage at the ice cream shop in the summer.
Exactly. Like, back in my day. So, back in the day in Waxahachie, if I find out that the quarterback, the running back, couple offensive linemen, and the tight end on our state championship team were, getting a little money. They had a car deal, and they drove a nice car. Well, first of all, I expect them to drive a nice car. They're the mm-hmm. quarterback of my team. What are you talking about? So? What's the problem? Because some of them didn't go on to big-time college careers.
Right.
They would have been able to maximize their potential right then to raise money, raise interest, raise awareness, and raise the just kind of spirits of a community. It also would have given them a chance, Trey, like in a college community, to get connected in an even bigger way to your hometown. Show somebody in your hometown you can work, and then if you go off to college and fail, or it doesn't quite go the way you wanted it to, you get to come back home and you've already got a path.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I worked with that car dealership thing back in the day. Let me go back there and see what's up. Just like a former Longhorn could do that here.
That's right.
What's wrong with all that?
There's not a damn thing wrong with it,
man.
Chad.
But Quinn Ewers, that's something where they may need to think about. The state of Texas is going to be forced to lower that bar at some point.
And say
when you're 15 or older, you can get into NIL. Otherwise, other big dog quarterbacks are going to start making this decision. By the way, Trey, what about Arch Manning? Do you think he can make any money before?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We haven't even gotten to that example just yet in terms of whatever the hell his earnings potential is going to be.
He's going to make Quinn Ewers look like nothing.
Right.
Drop in the bucket. So do you think Quinn Ewers and his family perked their ears up when Nick Saban said what he said in San Antonio? Do you think that mattered to him?
Yeah, it mattered.
When he said he hasn't even taken a snap, and he's by the way, the estimate today I saw in a story is about $800,000 for Bryce Young. Bryce Young's.
Do we know what he's going to be endorsing?
I'm sure it's in there. I haven't read through the story yet to see exactly what it is, but yeah, maybe multiple things, but they think it's around $800,000.
Wow.
So a side of NIL that we hadn't really considered. Quinn Ewers, of course, people around here remember Quinn's name. He's the guy that was a Texas commit and then ends up as an Ohio State commit and was beaten by Westlake in the state championship game by Mr. Klubnik, who is headed to Clemson. Quinn Ewers, as of right now, is headed to Ohio State. And, boy, that could lock in really fast. If it goes, because his signing day hasn't even shown up, right? But if he completes the class, then he can enroll and, I guess, sign everything and take off.
That's right.
That's crazy, man. By the way, hair care products are a must there. Hair dye, hair something, everything.
Yeah, all that.
How do you keep that mullet in shape, Quinn? Tell us.
I mean, Last Stand Hats should be trying to sign that guy up.
Totally. What would Last Stand Hats do with Columbus? The state of Ohio and then, I don't know, a big horseshoe? What do you do? Last Stand Hats, guys, are you out there? You got any ideas?
I don't know. Maybe a horseshoe with a mullet, a blonde mullet coming out off the bottom?
Horseshoe with a mullet. Good call. Kind of like Jeff George back in the day. He had the horseshoe and the mullet with the Colts. Remember that little mullet he had going
on? That's true, yeah.
All right, coming up, your 2 o'clock hour, one of our favorites coming in studio. You might remember Tyler Coe from back in the day, producer and on-air talent for this station back in the day. Did a little work at Rooster Teeth at one point, and now he's got a podcast coming out. He's going to tell you all about that, and we'll get his thoughts on the Longhorns to the SEC, and we might make him talk Monkey Wars unless Trey wants to hold it for tomorrow. We'll see on the Horn.